Hello and welcome to the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Man, Tuesdays. These Tuesdays have been getting in, getting out, moving around, and just doing some things. Making me feel some kind of way about it. Oh my gosh. I was just talking to a friend of mine. Well, another friend of mine. Make it sound like I only have one friend, right? So that's another topic for another day when you talk to somebody. Yeah, I was talking to a friend yesterday. Well, I started thinking, well, am I not your friend? You're talking to me on the phone. I mean, I don't give my number just to a bunch of people. Some people have my number who are not friends of mine. Because I live by the scripture that no greater love a man have than he lay his life down for his friend. The scripture doesn't say that you lay it down for family or just some random person or someone who thinks that they're something in your life. It says a friend, and a friend is someone that you choose to be in your life. And it's a person that means something, has value. You chose them, they chose you. And it's an important thing and a placeholder in your life. And as I look up the word friend, it's a noun. Well, actually, it's going to be a noun and a verb, but the noun side of it means it's a person attached to another by feelings of affection or personal regard. A person who gives assistance or a patron or support, or a person who is on good terms with one another, a person who is not hostile, a member of the same nation or party, etc. For the verb side of that friend, it's rare or to befriend or another part of it, it's to add, meaning a person, to a list of contacts. Of course, like on social media, we do a lot of that a lot of times when we live our lives. How many friends you got on Facebook, or how many people follow you on Instagram and Twitter and things like that. And we throw the term around so loosely, but I don't. I can't. I friendship means a lot to me. If I call you friend, then I expect that if it comes time to lay your life down, then you should be there. At least, or put it this way, if I call you friend, I'm willing to lay up my life down for you if it comes to that, if it needs that, if it warrants that, if that situation arose, that's what I'm doing. I can only speak for my half of the friendship, but that's what I do. That's why I think I have very, very small number of friends. And I don't follow the rule that just because you're my, you know, second cousin twice removed, or my brother or sister or mother or father, that I would do the same. No, because you have to choose. You have to earn that right. That to be a friend, that means I have to choose you. You choose me. We make that connection. We're bound together by more than just blood. And I get it. You know, the old saying used to be blood thicker than water, and you know, your family's always going to be there. But that's not true. If in so many cases, if we weren't related to a person by blood or by having the same parents or, you know, parent family relationship, you wouldn't even have anything to do with the people that we're related to. So, and that's no disrespect to my siblings or my aunts, uncles, cousins I have. It's just, because in my case, there's a big age gap, I should say, between my siblings and I. Same thing I see with my kids. There's an age gap and generational gap between my kids, my younger set and my older set. And even amongst the younger set, there's a split, a gap where, you know, my 14 and 15-year-old, they don't have much, you know, other than certain games in common with their younger brothers. So there's, you know, there's some issues and conflicts that we all have inside of, you know, those we're close in proximity with on a regular basis. And there's just some moments where I don't fault them for, once any of my kids get older, not having anything to do with each other, because they don't run in the same circles. Even being in the same place where we live in right now, we live in close proximity with each other, and we're in each other's space quite often. And I watch them, and they may play the same video games or the same time or other games or the same collection of games, but they're not on the phone with the same friends and on the same group chats during these online games with the same sets of friends at the same time. Each one of my boys, from Shane down to Jackson, have their own friend set for their own reason. And you have to purposefully stay in connection with those that you have befriended, those that you've chosen to be friend, those that you've chosen to be friendly with. And like you go into the back to the noun definition, those you've chosen to not be hostile to, you have to choose to be in that circle. So, you know, as we're going through the series right now, called Teachable Moments, and even with kind of preparing for this, I was really wondering in my mind when this topic hit me, is this really fit into this whole teachable moment segment? And I don't have everything, you know, prepared and you know, premeditated and set out, and I don't have all my scriptures together, all my questions lined in, but I knew beyond a shadow of knowing that this is a topic that's important. And I was originally going to call this, you know, this topic, Love Don't Live Here Anymore, because I was it's the way I'm kind of feeling, and it all connects. And so what was really rolling around in my mind are the lyrics to that Rolls Royce song. You know, so those of you who are in old school, you know, when I say Rolls Royce and Love Don't Live Here Anymore, you already start hearing that do, 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 do. Yeah, you know, that's the old school vibe. But I'm going to read the lyrics of that song because it fits what we're talking about today. But I have to change the title. So the title, it couldn't be Love Don't Live Here Anymore, because that's what the enemy wants you to believe going forward, is that love doesn't live in your heart or in your mind or in your space anymore. If you've suffered any type of loss, or if you're trying to get yourself together and you've experienced loss of any type, whether it be a loss of a job, car, personal item, friendship, relationship, you name it, family, you name it, the enemy wants to make you believe that love doesn't live here anymore for any reason or another. So then the topic for this series, this week of the series, this will be week 5, I believe, it's called Vacancy. It's just a vacancy. So let's talk about the lyrics of the song. I'm going to read them. It starts off with the chorus, right? You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here anymore. When you lived inside of me, there was nothing I could conceive that you wouldn't do for me. So trouble seemed so far away. You changed that right away, baby. You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Goes on to verse 2, says, love don't live here anymore. Just emptiness and memories of what we had before. You went away. You found another place to stay, another home. Yeah, and it goes back in the chorus again. I know you hear it. I know you're singing it. You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here anymore. And I love this third verse. In the windmills of my eyes, everyone can see the loneliness inside of me. Why'd you have to go away? Don't you know I miss you? Don't you know I miss you so and need your love? Of course, it finishes off with the whole chorus. You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. And then the singer, she just really rails this out over and over, this chorus as she goes, and then the crowd starts to get in, because we've all been there in that lonely moment, or those lonely moments when someone has left us, the someone we loved so more than just life itself, just left us. But what I'm trying to bring across even this song, it has nothing to do with always a romantic love. That's what we often find ourselves so bound with, is, oh, no one loves me, no one loves me, and I'm not with the one I love. Well, yeah, people used to say, if you can't love and be with the one you love, then love the one you're with. There's the truth right there, because some of us are saying, well, how do I do that? And I almost said it here on radio. How do I do when I'm by myself? Oh, because that'll preach by itself. That'll preach on its own. So the real is, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. And we're with ourselves every moment of every day. So that's the crux right there. We need to love the one we're with, us. Every day, all day. Even when those moments when we don't feel lovable. When we don't want to be loved. When we don't think that there's another person out there next to us, across from us, across town from us, who we can express that romantic love, and they express it back to us in the way that we want and need them to. Or the one we love Let's get real. I mean, I'm a victim of it. The one you love died. But here's the thing. You don't have to have had a loved one to die to experience that kind of loss. In some of our cases, some of us have been married 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and the love died 60 years ago. In day one, day two, but we stayed married because in that era of 60, 70 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, 40 years ago, you married because it was the thing to do, especially if someone got pregnant. And I get it. You know, I understand we're on air right now, WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. I get it. You know, we teach and preach the whole no sex before marriage. It's not not a biblical thing to do. God doesn't like it. I get it. Fornication under carnal knowledge. I get it. But some of us are getting it. Some of us are lying about getting it, and some of us have no shame about getting it. And I'm not trying to justify whether you get it or you don't. But what I am saying is, where we are in our minds, it's got to start with a love of ourselves, which is based upon our love of God. So oftentimes we compare loves just to what someone else has. If I'm rich, if that person's rich, or they have something more than I have, oh, God must love them more, or they must be more lovable because they have something more than what I perceive myself to have. It's a tough spot. The Lord had given, since we've recently moved, we've been sharing over the last episode or two that we've moved recently. Third move, 3 years. And I can, you know, it can make me feel some kind of way. It has made me feel some kind of way about the moving. And I'm really working through all that, and that place where we're in right now, again, I've shared before, it's a smaller place. It's an older place. It's a place like I've never would have imagined moving into. And we're in a little, you know, a bit of a tighter quarters and closer proximity to each other. The kids and we all have a space to be, but our spaces to be are definitely closer to each other than we've ever been in our lives. And that's fine. And again, I hope no one, and I don't ever want to come across as a person that brags and boasts of, oh my God, we've lived in some amazing places. And we have. We've been very thankful, very blessed to have lived in some really awesome places. But we've also lived in a place that we just didn't love. We've all been there. We've all lived in a place or two or 20 where we didn't love it. When we moved from that place to this place, the Lord, I was really dealing with the Lord in terms of, and I said I was dealing with the Lord because the Lord, I felt in a lot of cases the Lord put me here. Well, you know, in a lot of cases I've done myself wrong. I put myself in a place where it's not a good place. And I get, you know, I live by Romans 8 and 28 for so many years, where all things work together for those who love God, those who are called first and who love God and are called according to his purpose. So, hey, I get it. So, in a permissive will sense, yes, no matter what we do, what we don't do, how it comes about, where we turn, it all works together. But there's some moments when I got here, I was dealing with the thought of, I don't like this place. I don't like the way it looks. It's tiny. It's small. It's nothing about what I wanted. It was all about not feeling like we had a choice about where we were going to live. This was the only available place that I could find. And I was beginning to feel that. While I was driving to this place on the very first day to even just do the walkthrough, a good friend of mine was on the phone with me, Eric Tomlinson. And I remember the Lord had given me a word when I was talking to Eric. And I remember trying to say, Eric, you know, the Lord wants us to all remember that the blessings that he sends before us are like, they come in different shapes that he wants them to. They come in different packages. They come in different ways. They come looking different. So sometimes what we see on the outside of it, something that's dirty, something that's trashy, something that doesn't fit our mold, and it doesn't fit our own mold, it doesn't fit our framework, it doesn't fit our style or our aesthetic, it doesn't fit my vibe, it doesn't feel like me. It's just not me, God. And I don't want it to be. So Eric he's the gentleman that's at Rancon Realty. He's one of our sponsors. And I remember telling Eric, because it was a little give me a real estate example. The Lord was just saying, you know, no matter what the place looks like, you know, it may not look like a place where you want to be. It could have all these things. It could have weeds. It could have whatever, whatever. But it's, as you reel it back and you pull the weeds and you paint and you clean, you step back for a moment, the place could have everything that it's supposed to have. Our blessings have everything that they're supposed to have. And in so many cases, those supposed to haves have everything that we want it to have in our lives. So after I saw the place, and it was one of those things, I pulled up and it was weeds everywhere and, you know, broken concrete in the driveway and older place and darker paint. And I was like, I was struggling. I was like, ugh, what is the deal? Lord, where are we at? I thought we had just kind of come from the season of, oh my gosh, to whatever. Lord was quick to remind me that it's not the size of the house that you live in. It's the size of the heart that lives in the house. And I was like, oh gosh, you really had to hit me with that one, right? I had to have a larger heart to live in this smaller home because I had to love God more. I had to understand that God's love for us had everything to do with what he wanted us to have, where he wanted to place us, and the whole road or path or journey, this whole predestined idea that God already knows the end from the beginning, the Alpha and the Omega. I get it, but we don't get it. The part about that we don't get is that we don't want to live it out. And when that whole beginning and end, Alpha and Omega, starts happening to us, the beginning and end, and it brings us to those parts in our journey that suck, we don't want to live that part. We believe, we start saying, oh gosh, what's happening? We must have done something wrong. I'm tired of being in this negative season. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we have to remember that every place of every moment of every season is a part of the plan that God has for our lives. The Lord already knew the choices we were going to make. He knew that people were going to come and go in our lives. He knew that Johnny Joe Blow or Pastor such and such or Sister so-and-so or your family, brother, sister, best friend, your dog, whatever, they were either going to die, do you wrong, bite you, piss on your floor, crap on your carpet, throw up on you, you throw up on them, you hurt somebody else. The Lord already knew that. So nothing that we've done or happens to us is a surprise. But as you go through all of this, every step along the way, every instance of hurt, pain, sorrow, or whatever, we grow and we can become better. And then our perception and experience with God grows, shifts, and gets even better. So our relationship with God is based upon our experience with God. So again, our relationship with God is based on our experience with God. And all right, we're going to experience a couple of commercials and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Raise the Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. We're doing Teachable Moments right here on WKBY 1080 AM.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
How do you avoid pitfalls that will disrupt your life? My office is very good with helping families protecting assets, building wealth, college flexible plans, tax-free retirement, and so much more. I am Jontrice Wells with World Financial Group, licensed to help million-dollar families, businesses, and everyone in between. You can contact me at 951-757-4202 or email me at jw.nofamilyleftbehind@gmail.com. I'm about your family.
And we're back to the Raise a Men Show. Again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and we're in the study series, Teachable Moments, and I do believe this is week 5. And again, we were going to call it a different name, but this is going to be called Just a Vacancy. First segment, we're talking about just life, and we'd read the lyrics from, or I said we, it's just me, or me, myself, and I, me and the Lord and Holy Spirit, maybe that's what we're talking about, the we. So, read the lyrics from Rolls Royce, Love Don't Live Here Anymore. As we continue to talk about where we are in vacancy, I wanted to share, again, we've moved, and we were talking about, just as we're closing the last segment, about a new place we're moving into, and we are in, and it's different. And the last two years, actually, going on three, this is 3 moves, 3 years, 3 different places where we have put up no pictures, no artwork at all in these homes. And we came from a place where my late wife and their late mother was definitely a decorator, designer, extraordinaire. And if any of you have ever met Sandy Carlisle, you would already know in an instant that she is who she is. And she was quite a designer. She was into the fashion. She was into fashion versus fit. She was definitely into a certain aesthetic that she wanted to pass through the house and wherever we were going, whether it be clothing or furniture, you name it, it was there. And so when I shut the first house down and we moved into a condominium, and I just wanted to get that done. It was just getting over. And we packed up and consolidated our house. I purged a lot. I put stuff on the walls. Put stuff in storage, and we just lived. I didn't worry about things that were on the wall. We were living in someone else's place. We had moved into my dad's condominium for a while, and it was actually my first home when I was 23. And so whatever was on the walls were there. It wasn't our stuff. It wasn't the stark memories of where we had come from. It was just the walls painted white. Whatever was there that my dad and mom had, it was there. It was their memories. It was their images. The place we moved into after that, rental place, we existed. I bought new furniture. I'd shared with before on previous shows. We bought furniture. It was just there. It felt like a vacancy because it was open space, and we never really settled in. I bought furniture and had furniture. So we had a combination of old, new, and we were just there. And I never put up anything on the walls. I still had all of our stuff. Please believe it. I didn't get rid of any of the pictures and portraits of family that were taken that we had printed. And we had some other stuff that were artistic related things. I got rid of those and those kind of things because I wasn't really sure how to decorate it. I know some of the stuff was dated and by that style. We weren't going with that aesthetic. I didn't have an aesthetic. I don't quite know what it is. Maybe I do. Maybe we all do. But we just haven't quite put it all together. So we get to this third move, and I really have been challenging myself to settle in. Because when we go to different places and we move from place to place, yes, you do move in because your stuff is there. And I've heard the old saying, like we all have heard, home is where the heart is. And I get it. But so the place where we've lived in the last, previous two moves, they were definitely homes because we were all there. Love was there. We didn't love being there, but we were there as a family. This place, the search spot, I feel a whole different perspective that the Lord has given me. It's like we want to settle in. And I made a commitment to myself, and I made a commitment to the kids that this time we're gonna put pictures up on the wall. We're gonna decorate. We're gonna buy house plants. We're gonna make this place a home. We're gonna find some aesthetic that goes with the furniture we have, and we're gonna make this thing not just a man's cave or just a locker room, which is a bunch of guys or some gaming center, right? I've been accused of being the game master, and I don't play video games. To be real truthful and transparent, I don't play those things. Yeah, I do have a PS4. I think I've played on it maybe 3 times, maybe if I really stretch. The kids do play those games, and I don't mind that. And it's a whole place in itself. That's a whole story in its own. So we're not going to even deal with that right now, because I'm sure there's some people already have feel some kind of way about that topic. But anyway, so having all the pictures and handling the pictures of my late wife in it with the family, those are challenging for me. This is going into year 7. This is beyond halfway point of year 7 as she's been gone. And this is it's a for real thing. Where it's easy to talk about it and say we're going to do things, but when it comes to actually putting that action in there, we got to do it. And when you have a vacancy in your life, you have to be purposeful with where you're going and being fruitful in your next season. And not necessarily the season that you're in, because sometimes the season that you're in is famine. Sometimes the season that you're in is winter, and nothing grows in the winter. Everything just dies. But when you know you're out of winter and you're in spring, there is a lot of growth in spring. There's the ground is warming in spring. The seeds that you had planted before winter are going to begin to be able to grow in spring, but harvest is not in spring. Now, I'm not a farmer, so I'm not sure there is a farmer out there that says, you know, that's not true, statement that God doesn't know what he's talking about. Because yes, we do have winter fruits, those that have a skin on it, those have a rind on it. So all the citrus that has the thicker skin, yes, they are more of a winter fruit. I get it. We can harvest those things through at some point. Now, if you guys are, you know, listening to the feed, you know, comment by and, you know, send me a message on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and let me know, hey, you know, we do harvest in these winter seasons, or this is harvested in winter, this is harvested in spring. Let's do that. I did not prepare that information for this broadcast. Sorry. I'm not a farmer. I don't have a green thumb. I've got a brown thumb. But I don't kill plants. I buy those plants that are resilient to people like myself. Now, I say all this to say that as we were prepping to be honest, being transparent and moving forward with that whole putting pictures up, we've only been in this place going on, this is into our second month of actually moving in. And I knew that if I didn't do better with moving and doing and stepping forward and settling in, those pictures were going to sit there in the garage forever. So today we dealt with it. We're dealing with it. Brought the topic up with the kids probably a couple weeks ago, and I told them, you know, I want us to settle in. Go find the pictures that you want. Set them aside. I don't want to get anything damaged. If there's a picture that you want, grab it. Set it aside. All the other pictures that you don't want, pass it to me. We'll put them up in the attic, and we'll keep them safe. We're not going to throw anything away. These are mementos. These are memories, you know. Sandy's always going to be a part of my life. She's always going to, because she's my late wife. She's the mother of my kids. And I don't ever want to deny that. I don't want to give that impression to my kids that I deny their mother's existence, that we're going to just wipe her off the face of the earth or the face of our memories of earth. It's because it's just not possible to do. She's a part of the kids' life every moment of every day. I see her face in their faces. I hear her tone in questions, in their line of questions and comments. So we can't, if you have that issue with people that are no longer in your life, whether it be through divorce or death or broken relationship or whatever, no matter how much you try, those people are a part of your relationship, just may not be an active part. So the boys and I did not get it done yesterday. So today was the day. This is the day. This was the day the Lord has made. We want to be rejoice and be glad and put those pictures up on the wall. So I let the kids kind of have their moments today, do what they got to do. And I don't know, about 7, 8, 9 o'clock. Oh no, about 6, 7 o'clock. We got ready. I said, look, come on, let's go put these pictures up. Let's just get it done. Set it out. And as they were setting pictures out, I still found myself again, feeling some kind of way about seeing Sandy's face in these pictures again. And realizing that they're going from the garage. They're not in storage anymore. They're coming inside the house. They're going to go up on the wall. And it was something. I didn't want any of the pictures of her, I, or the kids in my room, my space. That's my sanctuary. This is my happy space. It's a place where I need to be. At least I'm already dealing with my thoughts in here. So that's enough to deal with. I need to be free. So Evan, my 12-year-old, he brought me this really cool picture. We have a really cool picture of Sandy. It's like a 17 by something. It's a taller picture, a little narrow, and it doesn't have a frame currently. I'm 90% sure someone printed it for us for Sandy's funeral, and we've thankfully been able to manage to keep it perfectly intact all this time, but I need to have it framed. And Evan brought it to me. He said, hey, Dad, here's a cool, really nice picture of Mom. You should hang it in here. He brought it right in my room. I had been working and I was preparing for a meeting for work. And I was so engrossed in that. When he brought it to me, my mind just kind of freaked out. I wasn't expecting to see this picture of Sandy, you know, kind of being shoved in my face. And then, you know, Evan wasn't thinking anything of it. He was just thought it was a great picture of his mom. Hey, Dad, you should, this is for you. Why don't you put this up in your room? How cool is that? And I failed that test. Just to be brutally honest, to be real. I failed the test as a dad. So I told him my response that I managed to muster after I kind of got past my stumbling and stammering was, don't worry about it. So no. I can't put that up in here. No, not that one. No. I said, son, I let me prep for my meeting, and then we'll just, that's about all I could get out. And I really felt bad about that, because I know he didn't understand, and so I sat all the way through this conference call, and unfortunately I had to leave the conference call for probably the first half, and so after I no longer had to present and facilitate the meeting, that's all I thought about was my response, or my poor response that I gave to my son about a picture of his mother. And went back after the meeting was over, had him come in, and we talked about it. We had to deal with it. I didn't want to let too much time go by. I needed to deal with that right then, because I didn't want him thinking some kind of way. I didn't want him to think that love doesn't live here anymore. And I told him, I said, you know, son, I needed to talk to you about that picture. I apologize to you. I didn't give you the response that was right or correct. I didn't give you a good response at all about that picture, because it's a really cool picture you brought me in, and it's a really great idea that you had, that you thought enough of me to bring that picture to me. But I said, you know, I didn't give you a good response. And he says, yeah, I know. I was concerned. It made me sad. He said, I was, my first thought was, well, mate, maybe he doesn't love mom anymore. And I was like, ugh, that was a kick in the, and so I didn't want him to think that I didn't love his mom. And I let him know, I said, you know, no, I love your mom. I loved, past tense, your mom. She's not yet here anymore. I cannot have an active romantic love for your mom. You cannot have an active romantic love. You cannot have an active love for someone who does not actively love you back. And in this case, she cannot actively eros love me back. Yes, from a spiritual standpoint, she can agape love me back in the spirit, because she's in heaven with God. And for those of you who believe in gifts of spirit and, you know, angels, whatever, if you actively believe as you've had visitations from your past loved ones, bless you, maybe you have, maybe you haven't. I don't know. I know the word does say clearly that absent from the body, present with the Lord. So, but it doesn't speak to what the Lord allows you to do. And is it the Holy Spirit that you're with, or is it your past loved one? I don't know. I'm not going to get into that, because I've had my own visitations and own experiences with that, and we'll deal with that on another day. But I don't put anything past God to do what he wants to do and have his plan executed to the level at which he wants it executed. So I needed him to understand that I can deal, that his dad can deal with pictures of his mom, that his mom is always a part of our life. I told him, son, your mom is always a part of our life, will always be a part of our life, though she's not going to be an active daily moment and part of our life. I told him, I cannot personally have pictures of her in my room. This is my sanctuary. This is my safe space. This is my place where I wrestle enough with my own thoughts in my room. I don't need to put myself at risk of having anything else to wrestle with and have a picture of your mom, no matter how beautiful the picture may have been or is. I can't also have that in my room. Down the halls, in your guys' rooms, in the kitchen, or other places throughout the house, yes, we can deal with that. I also tell the boys that the house is not going to become a mausoleum or a museum to your mom. We will put and celebrate pictures of the family throughout the house, inclusive of pictures of your mom. Now, we may find another place on the wall to honor her with a space with this picture, for this picture. But inside of my room, you will not find pictures like that. And he took it well. He says, yeah, okay, I understand completely. So we were able to have that open dialogue about that vacancy that I have. And my walls are going to remain vacant until I find those pictures that the Lord wants me to put up that are healthy for me. And I say that in this week of the study because there are losses in our life that we've gone through that we haven't dealt with. We choose not to deal with them. A lot of guys, we ranger up, we soldier up, we just kind of bury it. We just push it all the way down and we just choose not to deal with the problem. I used to be passive aggressive. That passive aggressiveness was my dad's favorite thing. And I think my mom too, but she was aggressive. She was aggressive and passive aggressive. There wasn't a whole lot of passive with my late mom. Man, but my dad, oh my gosh, he would definitely hit you up with some passive aggressive. You weren't really sure from time to time what the heck he was talking about when it dealt with things outside of the pulpit and outside of the pastoral level, administrative. As a father, I've taken that from him where I want to become better administratively with my family, my first church. So I need my boys to understand where we're going. So we do spend a lot of time giving direction. And I find that they're better for it, that once they understand the big picture, once they understand the plan, once they understand where we're going, make it plain for them. And they can ask all the questions they want. I just don't want them to ask me the same question over and over. So while I'm talking to them, I need them to understand and need them to pay attention. And I need them to focus and ask their questions. And I will answer them all one by one. And we do that. When there's a vacancy, I need them also to understand that their dad has a vacancy in his heart right now. But I need them to understand that, yes, that love does not live here anymore, but it doesn't not live here. So like we go back to Rolls Royce, that love was an Eros love, a romantic love. No, that love doesn't live here right now. But I'm not going to come into agreement with the enemy and speak death over my life and curse myself and say, no, love doesn't actively live here anymore, and set that into a future present tense or a future ongoing tense where it doesn't live here anymore, period. So we're going to cancel those words anytime I've sung that song and meant it from that perspective. And I encourage you all to do the same, is to cancel those words and word contracts that you make with the enemy about negative things in your life that you're not going to do, that you know that you will do if the Lord commanded you to do that. So for those word curses over my life, I ask, Lord, I break those curses in Jesus' name. So I break the word curse that love don't live here anymore from an ongoing, continuous perspective of romantic love. Because I speak into resistance, yeah, I will marry again. I will fall in love again with someone who loves me. I will marry again to the one that's sent for me for this season in my life. Yes, we will have a prosperous marriage. We will have an open marriage full of communication, and we will both love the Lord, and she will love, we will both love God more than we love each other. So there's a contract I can get in with. But I refuse to be connected in the spirit anymore to a dead person. So yeah, I broke the soul tie with my late wife years ago. And for every moment when I long to be with her in that way, I go back, we break the soul tie again. However many times it takes, yes, we break those soul ties. And we have soul ties with people who aren't romantic with us in our minds because we may have wanted them to be romantic. I mean, come on, dudes, we all look at those same things as somebody passes you by, oh man, I'd love to be with her or whatever, and you start thinking about it. Some of you don't even say it. Can I said it on air? Yeah, okay, fine. That's what it is. I'm not trying to be the shock jock of Christian radio. I'm just being truthful. We make those moves. Guys that we know that who've stepped out on our wives verbally or mentally without ever having done it. But then there's a group that have done it, and we make them seem like as if, oh, you're the worst person in the scum of the earth because you did it. Well, yeah, you may very well be because you actively did it. But the sin of that action doesn't make any... It's not any greater than the sin that we may have had in our mind about doing it. It just never did. So you have no smaller sin because you thought about it or are thinking about it as I'm talking about it on the air. You're listening to me. You're still guilty. The point is, the Lord knows who you're thinking about. Even if you didn't share with somebody. And some of y'all are thinking about doing it with somebody who you're already actively planning it with, to be real honest with it. So let's not put this thing on the rug and think that this guy's lost his mind or all of a sudden I have some clairvoyant picture into your life. No. But I know me. I know some other people whose marriages are in trouble. Chasing other women, single or otherwise. When shortly after my wife died, and we experienced a vacancy, had the people ask me, all of a sudden I became a popular target to have conversations about relationships. And I used to tell people all the time, and I get frustrated, and I think I owe a public apology to all of you who are married that I've talked to and have felt some kind of way about your relationship. Because I'm not in a relationship. I'm not married. My wife's gone. But you know what? Any person that has talked to me about their marriage in a way that when you're frustrated about your marriage and you talk about your spouse like they got six legs and 12 eyes and they treat you so poorly, I'd say, you know what? I don't have any sympathy for that. You need to deal with your problems. Stop being a wimp and whatever you want to call it and deal with the problem. You have an opportunity to fix it. I don't. My wife's dead. I can't fix anything in our relationship now. She's gone. So all of the time that I waited and thought we had tomorrow to have that conversation, to say I'm sorry, or to ask for that or demand that apology and work through your issues and talk through where you've been and frustrated that you leave the toilet seat up when you pee or down when you don't, or you leave your underwear on the floor, or you just looking at that person sideways, or you don't hold my hand, or why don't you talk to me soft, and why don't you share your feelings? Why don't you you know what? You got to speak up. Old school saying is, yeah, closed mouth doesn't get fed. That's true. You got to do something. You can't sit back and complain and be upset and frustrated about the situation that you're in. Do something about it before it's too late. Because before you know it, you'll have a vacancy too. And man, I don't wish this vacancy on my worst enemy. Thought about it, but I don't wish this on my worst enemy. Again, you're listening to The Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. We'll be right back, and we'll come right into our last and final segment. We'll be right back. This is Craig Carlisle, the host of The Raising Men Show, and I'm also an executive producer of the independent feature film, Restored Me.
I lost everything for something I didn't do. What type of God is going to watch a man get up on his feet and then kick him right back down and get dragged through the dirt again?
It's a powerful, feel-good dramedy that centers around a young man trying to restore his relationship with his young daughter and her mother.
Talk to him just like you're talking to me.
Where have you been, kid? These people take communion from me. I am their God.
This film speaks to restoring your faith and pushes a bold message of positivity and motivation. The cast includes Gary Owen, Bill Duke, William Lee, Matt Gerald, Richard T. Jones, Malik Yovo, Yancy Arias, and Bo Casper Smart, just to name a few. Restored Me is available on over 100 digital markets, including iTunes, Amazon, and on demand from your local cable provider. Buy it, rent it. Either way, I'm asking you to watch it. It'll bless your life.
And we're back to the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Again, this is our last segment. We're in week 5 of our study, Teachable Moments, and the topic is just a vacancy. And in this segment, we're talking about loss, and we're dealing with not just the loss of a spouse or a loved one that we were married to, losses of those that we were intended to be married to, losses of people that we wanted to be married to, losses of boyfriends, girlfriends, losses relationships, families, friends, just even not just in the pure death sense. Some of our relationships have died. Some of our friendships have died, and they're just not coming back. Now, granted, the Lord wants us to be, the Lord is something I have to deal with myself. Even when you have a relationship that needs to be restored, You can restore, let me say it properly to make sure I'm getting through the context of even the scriptures. You can reconcile a relationship, but you don't have to restore the relationship, if that makes any sense. You can reconcile the sadness and the hurt and the pain and get beyond that and move on, But the friendship, the relationship itself doesn't have to be restored. That's not a mandate. That's not a requirement. So some of, you know, some stand on that, oh, I got to go back and say, be in relationship, be right standing with that person. No, you don't have to, because there's some folks that are just not compatible with who I am. And I'm not, definitely not compatible with who they are. So there's no reason to restore that relationship. There's no value there. Now, I have, not like I have no less love for them in the spiritual sense, in the agape love, the love that I'd have for a fellow, for God, and the love I'd have for a fellow man. Yeah, I'll give you those two loves. But a friendship love where I choose you? No, I'm not choosing those people anymore that have done me dirty. I'm not choosing you. So if you're listening to the show and you've done me dirty, no, please believe it. I'm not choosing you. You're not on my friend. You're not on my friend list. Now, you may be Facebook friends of mine. You may follow me on Instagram and social media, but I can pretty much assure you, if you've done me wrong, there's a lot of people who I have unfriended on Facebook because of what they've done. And there's some other people I leave it open because I feel some kind of sordid obligation to leave it alone that way. But on Instagram, Twitter, no, I don't follow you. I don't. I don't call you. No, I don't. Do you call me or text me if you have my number? It may be blocked because I don't have to restore the relationship with you. I can be reconciled to God as related to what happened. We can go back and work, express to you and you express to me what I did to you and what you did to me. And we can make sure everybody knows where we are and be civil. Yes, civil all day. I don't have to spend any time in your presence. Don't have to share your air. Don't have to ruin my day looking at your text message and keeping it there. I can respond civilly to your text message. Yes. And delete it. Delete the string. And I do that because there's some text messages I get and certain calls I'll get after I work through and respond back and communicate with the person that sent it. I'll delete the string. I'll delete the evidence that that person was, that communication took place. Because I need my mind right. I need the vacancy to remain in my mind. I can't have my no vacancy then occupy with the anger and the feelings and the frustration and whatever. Maybe it's guilt, whatever. Feeling some kind of way about people. So, you know, on this show, I wanted to make sure I always give some tools and some keys to kind of help people. And I haven't done a good job in saying, hey, this is a helpful key. But here's one for you. I'm going to do better. One helpful key to help to reconcile a relationship, if nothing more, but in your mind and how you deal with someone who's done you wrong, is who you still have to have some form of active civil relationship with. So here's a teachable moment. Yes, when you're done with the interaction, when they get done calling you, speaking to you, or if you have to call them, speak with them. If you have to respond to their text or you text them, and when that string is done, unless, or even emails as well, unless you have to keep that history active on your phone for some legal purpose or where you think you may have to kind of come back to the information or something you have to act upon, keep it. And if you don't have to do that, delete the string. Delete the evidence. Remove the interaction from your view. So you don't have to go back and look at your phone. As maybe some people who, like me, when we were in active relationships, I have their picture on my phone as part, of their contact. And it does bring me some kind of, I remember what happened. I don't remember the good times. I remember where we are with the bad time. And I don't need any more reminders of negative. I need to flee from that negative. I need to not sin. I need to not be angry. I need to be, let's get the scripture right. I need to be angry and sin not. I mean, looking at the contacts in my strings from people, in history of for people who I'm not in good relationship with, an active, friendly relationship with, and it makes me want to sin. Because I can think of a whole bunch of things that you did and start feeling a whole different kind of way about it. So I take it out. Even today when I was talking to my 15-year-old Caden, he was talking about playing words with friends. And he and I, those who, you know, I play words with friends with, oh man, I love playing words with friends. I don't play words with friends with some people anymore because I'm not friends with them anymore. So, you know, I'm not even in a friendly relationship with them. So why would I want to have an interaction with someone in something that I like to do that kind of kills the vibe? Not doing that anymore. So if you have, you know, that's another key. If any interaction that you have with these people, you can minimize it, limit it. You set the parameters and boundaries around it. Monitor those interactions and go from there. You've got to make it healthy for yourself. If we're not being healthy in our relationship, healthy in our own self-care, that's a dangerous place to be, because even looking at phones, looking at social media, if you're not in a healthy relationship with people, don't follow them. Don't get notifications in Facebook. Take your notifications off and you can unfollow them and still remain friends. So if you still want to be cordial with them and have them see your posts, you see their posts when you want to go voluntarily go look, fine. But you can unfollow on your social media so you don't have to get an active reminder of what that person's doing to have you all of a sudden let the devil take your mind all kind of 15 different places that are all bad. So just again, Instagram, Twitter, you don't have to follow them. Don't have to look at their posts. Why do that to yourself? Some people follow their exes on posts. Some folks go cyber stalking someone that did them wrong. You don't need to do that. Stop it. Let's grow up. Let's get beyond the high school shenanigans. Another top thing that helps me with it, I'm very real with the people who I'm in conflict with, who I have a negative relationship with. When I have to deal with them, when I have to interact with them, when I have to exchange information with these people, I'm very civil. We deal with the issue at hand. Dealing with the issue at hand and not in the restless outside boundary, or some people say superfluous stuff, the extras. No, don't need to deal with the extras. Let's deal with the fact that you need this from me. Fine. There's your answer. Anything else you need? Great. Thank you for the information. Appreciate the update. Here's the answer you need. If I need to get information from that person, it's the same thing. We very civil. Don't need to add any extras to it. I pray before you go. That's another tool. Pray. We don't spend a lot of time praying about anything. The Bible even speaks about praying. We're supposed to pray all kinds of prayers. And don't you think that praying before you speak to people that you're in conflict with, don't you think that's a good idea? I know I do. I got a case in point. I got a text message from a person I'm in conflict with. And I shouldn't say that. Let's cancel those words, that I'm in conflict with that person. I've received a text from a person that I don't have an actively positive relationship with at this time. And they asked me a question. And I was like, I took it as a passive aggressive question. It sent me all into this whole highway of negativity. I was all over the place. And it was a pretty basic question that had nothing to do with me, really. They didn't need to have asked me about it. They could have asked anybody else. They could have gone to Google and got the answer. But for whatever reason, they chose to bring it to my phone. And I was so close to just deleting it, not responding, or just responding to an immediate negative and no, leave me alone, whatever, something I wanted to say. And I was making up all this crap in my head. And I actually rewrote the text message response probably about, I think to be not exaggerating, just to be totally honest, probably about 8 times before I finally just stopped and prayed. I asked the Lord, look, Lord, what do you want me to do with this? And that's really where a lot of us don't go. We don't really ask the Lord anything because we don't really think the Lord has a place in even our conflicts. But God is in everything. The word says, cast your cares on him because he cares for us. And if you have a conflict with someone, you better doggone know that he cares for us and those conflicts. And we need to cast that care, that conflict, that situation, that relationship on him. Let him handle that. So I asked the Lord, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do with this? And this particular text, it was something that another friend of mine could really do and support and handle for them. So I was like, okay, well, all right, Lord, then. So I passed it on, and it has worked out to be a very positive thing, and it's very outstanding that I did that. And I was very clear with my friend that I passed it on to that, dude, I almost, was going to do X, Y, and Z. And his response was, oh, man, I'm glad you didn't, because that's work. That was revenue. That was a blessing for someone else. And that's what we have to be reminded, that though we may not have an active relationship with someone that's positive at this moment, that the Lord's plan is still being done, still being followed through. Sometimes we are a blessing for someone else. We're a conduit for someone else. Sometimes we're that rock that's going to cry out in Jesus' name. So had I been selfish, had I been me, had I been grimy with how I felt, had I been in my flesh, in my thoughts, and in my own Craigisms, then another friend who needed to have that work done and that other group having that work done for them would have missed out. So I had to take myself out of the equation. So that's another tool. When you're in conflict with someone and you have a vacancy in a relationship and you're trying to do, you need to take yourself out of the equation. If you know that you're not in a mindset or the right person to deal and respond, take yourself out of it. Give it to the Lord. Ask the Lord, how should I respond to this? And just do that. Even if it's a short answer, give the answer. It doesn't have to be anything negative. You don't have to add all of the feelings and you did it. No, deal with the facts. The facts is this. It's peculiar. Because even if you live by the scripture that, you know, being kind to your enemies is like pouring hot, heaping hot coals upon their head or pouring hot coals upon their head, go with that. I like that. I like to kill you with kindness. I like to give it to you the way you gave it to me. And when I give it to you, I want to make you feel like you made me feel. But we're not supposed to do that. Not supposed to be tit for tat. Not for one for one. It's the end of this segment. End of the day. End of the show. Talking about teachable moments right here on the Raising Men Show. I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. I hope that some of this has been helpful. I trust and believe that it's helped me, I know. So if it's helped me deal through, I know it's going to help someone else. This topic was called Just a Vacancy. Can't just remember, I know some of us have vacancies in our lives that we just need to deal with. We need to admit to it and stop just soldiering on and sucking it up and bearing it. We've got to be able to be open and take some steps like we talked about in this very last segment to make it safe for ourselves and practice health care and cast our cares on the Lord because He cares for us. See you all here next week on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia, and all of our social media feeds at The Raising Men Show. Also on our archives at theraisingmenshow.org. See you guys again next week.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.